First Name Sports starts now.
We're kind of on a first name basis around here.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Okay, let's get started.
From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Greg Frank.
Halfway home on a Thursday afternoon, which means we're an hour closer to the beginning of the NFL draft as the countdowns for some fan bases have been on for months, but for everybody, I think today you're just waiting to get some answers. And the pencils down moments are coming for everybody. And we shall see. I'm sure there are some teams that are still very much undecided as to what they're doing. I asked this question last week with the draft, obviously getting close. It was a Friday Five question. What would you pay to be inside your team's draft war room tonight? I think I would pay the cost of a regular season game to be in the war room. I think it's a cool once-in-a-lifetime experience. You figure you can get into a regular season NFL game for $100, $150 upper level. I would pay that to have full access to the war room for my team. Even if I had to give up my phone, I think I would do it. But to each his own. Anyway, a little bit more on the Stanley Cup playoffs from last night, as there were just two games. And the Boston Bruins do not close out the Florida Panthers. And this one surprised me, because it's funny. We were just talking about the NBA team in Boston yesterday about how they couldn't close out a game at home. And now I'm saying the same thing about the hockey team in Beantown. It felt like after you go down there and win two in Florida, as the historic team in the National Hockey League this year, that you kind of broke the spirits of the Panthers, right? Because the Panthers go up to Boston and win game two, didn't play poorly in game one either, and so they're going back home thinking, hey, we belong on the same ice sheet as these guys. Then you lose two at home, and if you're Florida, you're, I would think, a little bit dejected heading to Boston, only to then win game five last night. They get the first goal, and that always helps when you're the team behind in the series, is you make the other team play catch up for a change. Anthony Duclair from Carter Verhaeghe at 8:26 elapsed time in the first period last night gave the Cats the lead, a lead that they would not relinquish. Boston never had the lead last night. There was a couple of three different ties, but ultimately Florida wins early in overtime, just 6:05 elapsed time. Matthew Tkachuk is the fortunate beneficiary of a turnover by Linus Ullmark behind his own goal and puts it into the open net, and Florida wins. So, you know, much the same way I feel about the Boston Celtics, I don't think that the Bruins are actually going to lose this series. But, and I actually think that Boston played a pretty good hockey game last night. When you look at some of the final stats, Boston outshot Florida, nearly doubled them up, 47-25. And they went 2-for-5 on the power play. But, you know, Ullmark's a guy that people are talking about as a Vezina Trophy candidate, which is the award every year for the best goaltender. And he coughs one up, and that's all it takes. They let Florida hang around. Again, allowed Florida to play with a lead on several different occasions last night. And then ultimately one blunder behind their own goal sees them getting on a plane and going back to Florida. So shame on the Boston Bruins, and now they'll have to play at the very least one more game in the first round. Speaking of playing at the very least one more game, the defending champs are hoping to play two more games at the very least, as the Colorado Avalanche are now on the brink of elimination. The Seattle Kraken, in their second year after last season was the first for the NHL's 32nd franchise, the Kraken, in their second season of existence, are one win away from a playoff series victory as Seattle goes to Denver last night and beats the Avs, minus Cale Makar, who was suspended. The top-tier defenseman for Colorado was not on the ice after a pretty dirty hit in Game 4 of this series. And Seattle wins 3-2. Philip Grubauer was again strong between the pipes for the Kraken. And I saw a stat last night when the minute it popped up on the screen, I took a picture of it because I knew I was going to want to cite this stat today on the show. The Seattle Kraken have 15 goals in this series by 13 different skaters. So that is exactly the illustration of what I've been talking about with Seattle and why they've been able to be successful. Because they have everybody buying in and they have different players contributing on different nights. And so what that means is they don't necessarily have the star power, but they have the right locker room. They have the right guys that, when put together, can help achieve the common goal each night of winning the game. And I think that we see this. I've talked about the New York Islanders having a lot of success structured this way as well, where certain hockey teams are successful without the top-end stars. Now, the degree with which they can be successful is still, you know, we're not entirely sure. I mean, the Vegas Golden Knights, I don't think, had any superstars 5 years ago when they went to the Stanley Cup playoffs, but they were deep. Or excuse me, the Stanley Cup final for the Knights. They were deep in a weird way. In their first season, they had depth. And that's kind of what I feel like with the Kraken now, where they defend well. Grubauer makes timely saves, and you look up and it's 2-1 Seattle after two, or something like that, just spitballing. And last night they end up winning the game 3-2. Now, Makar will be back out there tomorrow, and the thing is, against Colorado sometimes, and we saw this in Game 3 when Seattle lost at home, and Colorado had, at the time, at the end of the game, a 2-1 series lead. When you have Nathan MacKinnon, when you have Mikko Rantanen, when you have Cale Makar, Bowen Byram, like, they have guys that can just win games almost by themselves. And that you don't see that as much in hockey because one guy can only make so much of an impact. Connor McDavid, even for Edmonton, is on the ice for, I don't know, 20 minutes a night, just spitballing there. It's a 60-minute game. So, but if you have enough of those high-end guys, you know, one night could be a MacKinnon night. One night could be a Makar night. Another night could be a Rantanen night. Now, they don't have Gabriel Landeskog. He's been out all season for Colorado. And, you know, I wonder if that continues to be a thorn in the Avs' side. But I'll tell you, there's a level of confidence. And, like, they're not afraid of anybody, Seattle. They won a bunch of games on the road this year. And, you know, their coach, Dave Hakstol, has coached in the playoffs with the Flyers at his previous stop. And I think they have a lot of players. Like, Jordan Eberle was on the Islanders teams that made deep playoff runs. They have a lot of guys, players and coaches, that, you know, Grubauer had been with Colorado, that have played in big games, that have guys that have some of that playoff DNA. So it's interesting because you would have thought that after Vegas got to a Stanley Cup final in its first year, the rest of the NHL would have done a better job in terms of expansion drafting and protecting their own players from having another expansion team be this successful this quickly. But, you know, if Seattle wins this series, it would play the winner of Minnesota or Dallas. And neither one of those teams has the high-end talent Colorado has. So Seattle, I think, would have a chance in that series as well. Again, not getting ahead of myself, they still have to win this game tomorrow night in Game 6. It is going to be a madhouse in the Pacific Northwest. I always think one of the things that's cool about seeing Seattle have success, it's the same thing with Vegas when they got in 5 years ago. When you're successful right away, it creates this instant buzz with the team. Where if you were just a regular kind of expansion franchise that sucked for 3 or 4 years and you had to build the thing up, I never know if the ceiling is as high for you in that market because it takes a while for the fans to come. But if I told you that you were getting a hockey team and in that market you're going to be in the Stanley Cup final the first year, who doesn't say no to that? And that's what Vegas got, and the Knights have never been bad. And, you know, they're a big deal there. And I wonder if we might see some of that with Seattle just in terms of the instant gratification. Now, this is the second season, not the first season for the Kraken. And they're still just not even yet out of the first round. But in terms of that instant gratification that they're providing the fans in Seattle, we were all waiting for the Sonics to go back there. And for a relocated NBA team to go back or an expansion franchise. And the NHL got there first. And, you know, there's something to that. Getting there first, being successful first. I don't think the Knights are ever going to be, like, they're going to be a big deal in Vegas as long as they're there now. They were the first ones there, and they were good right away. Raiders were the second ones there, and it is football, but the Raiders are a mess. We'll see if the A's can finally put some Major League Baseball players on the field when they get to Vegas, because that was quite the teardown that the A's have gone through. So, pretty cool. Seeing the Kraken have this kind of success. And I'd like to see them close it out and win in six against Colorado. Give you some of my favorite draft prospects as the NFL draft begins tonight in Kansas City. That's on the other side. Howard Balzer is up in about 19 minutes, our Arizona correspondent. First Thing Sports, Sports Map Radio.
Back with First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Live from the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Greg Frank.
All right, I'm going to give you three guys on offense and three guys on defense for the 2023 NFL draft that have, caught my... Everybody's a draft expert, right? So why can't I be? You know, caught my eyes as I did some... I mentioned I had that four-hour Zoom call last week, if you remember... If you're a loyal listener, thank you. And last week I sat down with my buddies back in South Jersey and had a Zoom call talking about what we want the Eagles to do at number 10 and number 30 tonight, and talked about some of the later rounds as well. And so part of that Zoom was coming up with three prospects on each side of the ball that we like, not necessarily fits for the Eagles. And this guy, the first one I do think is a fit for the Eagles, and I'd love to see come off the board at number 10 to Philadelphia, and that's Peter Skoronski, the offensive guard tackle out of Northwestern. He's really strong, and I think people talk about his arms being short as a problem, but he seems to be a very athletic run blocker and can get to the second level pretty routinely there. So that you like if you want to put him right away in at guard. As somebody that you can run up the middle behind and really bolster your offensive line. He got matched up with Lucas Van Ness in an Iowa Northwestern game and really got the better of him last season. So I think that the versatility, too, of maybe being able to develop this guy into a tackle down the road, I think is certainly something that is – intriguing because he's somebody that could probably play right away at guard and could perhaps be a right tackle as well. So the mobile athletic offensive lineman is always a plus, especially in the day and age of it feels like we got a lot more running quarterbacks in the league now. So it allows teams to do a little bit more with their offensive playbook from a schematic standpoint. And, if you have mobile offensive linemen that can get out and you can run behind at various portions of the field that you otherwise maybe wouldn't have thought you could design stuff for. So I like Skoronski quite a bit. Staying in the Big Ten, Jackson Smith and Jigba, I don't think is being talked about enough in terms of how talented he is. And a lot of people don't mock wide receivers in the top 10. I think if Atlanta took Smith and Jigba at number 8 tonight, I would have no problem with it at all. Atlanta's a team that if they're committed to Desmond Ridder, then you want to help out your quarterback. They took Drake London in the first round last year. Tyler Allgeier did run for 1,000 yards as a rookie. I know Bijan's a popular pick for Atlanta, but I think Jaxon Smith-Njigba can change the game with how dynamic he is, and I saw it. I was driving down from Minnesota to Houston in the middle of November, and I stopped in 2021, and so this was when Garrett Wilson was still at Ohio State, although he was hurt in the game, so he didn't play. But Chris Olave was there, and Marvin Harrison Jr. was there, and I watched Ohio State play Nebraska, and Jaxon Smith-Njigba in that game had 15 catches for 240 yards and a score, and that was my, like, oh, wait a second. Like, how old is this guy? You know, where is he on their depth chart? Because they're not done after Olave and Garrett Wilson go in the first round. And sure enough, Marvin Harrison Jr. is not draft eligible this year, so we'll be talking about him, I'm sure, quite a bit next year. But I mentioned in that game against Nebraska that I was at, Smith-Njigba had 14 for 240 and a score. Combined, Chris Olave and Marvin Harrison Jr. in that game, 9 for 86 and a score. So, you know, vastly outperformed those two in that one game. And he just took over the Rose Bowl that season. 347 receiving yards in the Rose Bowl. So there's a lot of attention that gets paid to, you know, what happened last year and his hamstring and how much was he really even hurt. But when the guy's on the football field, he can change a game. So I like Smith-Njigba quite a bit. Now I want to talk about the quarterback that nobody's talking about as much, and that's Hendon Hooker, because I like this guy. Everybody talks about his age as if that's a problem, okay? And, well, you know, because he's already 25, and by the time he gets to his second contract, he'll be pushing 30. So that's a problem in the eyes of some, but can we not act like in the time he was in college, he didn't get better? Like, that's all he did was, you know, he transferred from Virginia Tech to Tennessee. And by the time he was done at Tennessee, last year, he was going to win the Heisman if he didn't tear his ACL. So I get why you would prefer a younger prospect, because you want more of those, you know, prime years in the NFL on your roster, not in college and already behind him. But it's less of a concern for me because he was productive. Like, we're not talking about this traitsy guy that you have to untap who's also 25. I think that when I think he should be drafted tonight, but if he does make it to tomorrow, wherever he ends up, this is a guy that will obviously have a bit of a redshirt year with the ACL recovery this year, but I believe as early as next year, you can start him and start winning games with him, because all he did in college was win. So I like Hendon Hooker. On the defensive side of the ball, a couple guys that'll go later in the first round, but I really like Brian Branch. I think the box safety, move him around the field, do all these different things with them, that player is so valuable because offensive schemes seem to get so much more creative. And so counteracting that with a defensive player who you can use to match up with so many, you know, tight ends or slot receivers, however you want to use him. In the middle of the field, he's just your defensive quarterback. And he'll just make plays, whether it's in run support or, you know, further back in the secondary. Just one of those, you know, fly around the field and do something for me type guys who I liked. So I like Brian Branch. Miles Murphy out of Clemson. First off, the size is great at 6'5", 275. And he's kind of your prototype 4'3". Defensive end, but he's also big enough to where if teams want to play, you know, three fours and you want to have him at more of a five tech spot where you have him more inside and perhaps going up against bigger offensive linemen, he could win in that kind of scenario as well. He's a bull rush type pass rusher who's strong enough with that size to beat guys at the line of scrimmage, but he's also got enough speed to be able to win and with quickness. So I think he's a pass rusher that can beat offensive linemen in a lot of different ways. And there's going to be a contending club tonight probably that takes him at the end of the first round that I think will end up pretty happy with their selection. And then the last guy, and this is a little bit biased because we talked to him at Radio Row at the Super Bowl, but Cam Smith, corner of South Carolina. Listen, Shane Beamer and what he had done with that program, they're going in the right direction. They're in Columbia, and this guy was a big part of their build there. And just in speaking with him, there was an excellent compete level that you could sense where I think if you play corner, you have to be able to talk trash and you have to be able to seek out the best on the opposing offense because you're going to be going up against the best wide receivers, the best quarterbacks. And in the SEC at Tennessee, you're talking about a conference that had Will Levis, that had Bryce Young, that had Anthony Richardson, that had Hendon Hooker. And one thing that stood out about watching Cam Smith a little bit was his closing speed and his ability. I always love this in defensive backs, when they're able to kind of bait quarterbacks into throwing the ball because to the naked eye, it looks like there's a window. And then once the ball is thrown, the closing speed for the defensive back leans in and breaks up the play or maybe even picks off the ball. Very athletic kid. 4.45 40 at the combine, 38-inch vertical, 11.2 broad jump. And so that put him in the 99th percentile in terms of the broad jump. And his just explosive numbers were, quantifiably elite. So I think if he goes at the back end of the first round, would make a lot of sense. Somebody gets him early in the second round, he should contribute pretty quickly. Because, again, the SEC, obviously, it just means more, right? That's what they say in the SEC. Well, it develops guys to, I think, be able to contribute earlier in their NFL careers. We will take a timeout on the other side. Howard Balzer is going to join as he's our Arizona contributor, somebody that anytime we need Cardinals stuff, I always like to talk to Howard. Did a lot of fun shows on Radio Row with him and going to talk with him about what might happen at number 3 tonight. Obviously, there's a lot of questions about Houston at 2, but Arizona at 3, are they going to get this right? The safe thing to do would probably be to just stick and pick and get Jalen Carter or Will Anderson or whoever. But they certainly may end up moving out. And are they going to get enough for that 3rd overall pick? We'll talk about it with Howard Balzer. It's First Name Sports. Sports Map Radio.
You're back with First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Live from the Sports Map Radio studios, here's Greg Frank.
Alrighty, we are back here on a Thursday afternoon. It is first round Thursday in the National Football League as the draft kicks off tonight in Kansas City. We're going to go out to the Progressive Guest Line and talk with one of the teams that a lot of people have their eyes on, but not necessarily because of who they might pick. Everybody talking about Arizona perhaps trading out, and so we bring on Howard Balzer, the Hall of Fame selector, Lindy's contributor, and of course somebody that is our eyes and ears in Arizona anytime there are things going on with the Cardinals. Howard, good to have you aboard. How you doing?
Pleasure being with you, Greg. How you doing?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a fun day, right? Like, I all the nonsense and the fluff and the clutter that comes with the draft, now we just get to find out what was real and what was BS.
Yep, that's exactly right. Wrote about it today on a website I do some work for and say it's the best thing about what will happen, tonight about 4 hours after the draft starts, and that is it'll be over, and even when the first 10 picks are over, we'll be pretty much done. No more smoke screens, no more guessing, no more lies. No more mock drafts for a while. We'll just know what actually happened. And then we'll spend a lot of time putting grades on it.
Oh, yeah.
Trying to grade a draft.
Winners and losers.
One or 2 days of the draft when we don't really know for about 2 or 3 years. But that's just the way it is. And I'm not trying to sound like a crotchety old guy complaining about it. But I kind of always chuckle about, especially with the run up to the draft, how so many people believed just everything that they.
Right.
Here's the bad part about it, Greg. Not only do people believe it now, But then they wager some of their hard-earned money on it. Oh, there's a mock draft that says Will Levis is going to be the first quarterback taken, first pick in the draft. And so people see this mock draft, these mock drafts, and say, oh, I'm going to bet on that. Oh, my goodness. Come on.
I know
betting is a long shot anyway, but, boy, that's not a good way to risk your money.
All right. Well, you mentioned that you had availability yesterday with the Cardinals. New brain trust there, Monty Austin-Fort and Jonathan Gannon. What's everybody saying out there?
Well, you know, we've had a bunch of availability. We had Monty Austin-Fort and Gannon last Friday with the draft press conference, and then yesterday was mini camp availability, and there wasn't as much talked about in the draft there. But I mean, they all, of course, talk about, oh, we've got a great plan, and we've got, then, you know, everybody says that.
Right.
All I know is you look at what this team has done in the off season is that they probably have the most underpaid coaching staff in the NFL for what was put together with a lot of inexperience on the coaching staff. And then they've signed 21 players since the start of the league year to bargain basement contracts. I termed it as they've been shopping at the dollar store. And in fact, with 21 contracts, Greg, they total $27.5 million of guaranteed money and $15 million of signing bonuses. That's what the former Cardinals defensive lineman Zach Allen got: $15 million signing bonus and $32.5 million guaranteed. And they have 21 guys that total that. So everyone kind of is a little wait and see to see what this group truly does, because they talk a good game. There's no doubt about it. But as we all know, talking doesn't mean anything when it comes to competing in the National Football League. So we will, there's a lot of time to find out what that's all going to look like. But how they handle this draft, I think, will be very instructive, Greg, because will DeAndre Hopkins be traded? Will they in time end up trading Buda Baker because they don't want to pay him more than he's making now? Will they give a fifth-year option to Isaiah Simmons? They have to make that decision by next Tuesday. Will they trade down with this first pick and try to get as many choices as they can to help this roster? We'll get a little better idea about this, after Saturday, and then as we head towards training camp. But so far, it hasn't been anything for fans to really get excited about.
Okay, well, forget what Gannon and Austin-Fort might be saying and trying to read into that. Let's just look at this, me and you. And when I see the division that they're in, a quarterback that maybe won't play all season, who knows, it feels like, and obviously having the down year that they had, it feels like a team that needs to peel back some layers. When you talk about those decisions with DeAndre Hopkins and Buda Baker, like, that seems like a team ready to undergo a rebuild, which, if we are to look ahead to tonight, that would mean, okay, if you're rebuilding, you don't have an obvious need a quarterback like some other teams, so you could get a lot for your third overall pick, and that could help kind of serve as a catalyst to a rebuild. Is that how you see it?
No, I definitely see it that way, 100%. And I can see the Hopkins one more than Baker, because Baker is the type of guy you want on your roster. He's still only 27 years old. He's the epitome of what they say, of course, every team says we're looking for guys who can play, obviously, but also for good character people. But leadership is something that is not everybody has. And that's one thing that Buda Baker has in spades. And he has that passion for the game. And to me, it would send a great message to get this guy signed. Doesn't mean you're going to win X number of games more than you would, but you send a message to everybody else on that roster that this organization will take care of guys when they're deserving of it. So, but yeah, I think that overall they have a lot of needs anyway. It's obvious from what the roster looks like. And so the more picks you can get, and they have, I believe it's 4 or 5 picks in the first 3 rounds already. And if you can get even more added to that, plus perhaps, get some, premium picks for next year, which will continue the building of this roster, then you're better off than with the one guy that you would get at third overall.
You know, Howard, I think another thing that I saw was Kyler Murray really likes Paris Johnson, the tackle out of Ohio State. And if there's one franchise that has just been, you know, giving too much power to its quarterback, I feel like it would be Arizona when you look at what's gone on the last 12 to 18 months. How involved is he here?
Kyler Murray?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, a lot of players, I'm sure, you know, they go in and they'll say, hey, I really like this guy. I played with him or whatever it might be. It doesn't mean they're going to be listened to.
Yeah.
I mean, Kyler Murray, a couple of years ago, he was hoping that the Cardinals would draft C.D. Lamb. And that
sure.
might have ended up being a better pick than Isaiah Simmons. But it's not as if he, by saying that, then the organization, oh, okay,
right.
you're going to draft him
right.
because Kyler Murray wants him. But I do think that offensive line is definitely an area that, I mean, Kyler Murray knows. I mean, he got the brunt of the criticism last year for regressing and this and that. But the offensive line had a lot of problems. A certain amount of it was injury, but a certain amount of it was a lack of talent. And so, you know, a lot of people said, well, I don't know if Paris Johnson's worth the third overall pick. Well, you know what? If he's the best lineman in the draft and you believe that, you know, he might not play tackle right away, he could play. They need a left guard. So if he can come right in and start, I mean, the one thing this team needs, all you have to do is look around the league and see the teams that are successful on offense or, you know, defense for that matter, are strong in the trenches. You better be strong.
Right.
And we talked about it at the Super Bowl during our shows,
sure.
how the Eagles and the Chiefs were two teams that not only had really good offensive lines, but had units that didn't miss virtually any games during the season. And so the Cardinals need a lot of help there. So, but in terms of Murray having any cachet in terms of what he says, then hey, yeah, okay, that's a good opinion. He's a good player, but they'll take whoever they think is the best to take at that point, and it won't be because Kyler Murray suggested it.
Yeah.
If in fact Johnson is the guy.
All right, Howard, last one for you. If they can't find a dance partner and they just stick at three, because of what we're saying about how it's a team that is probably entering a rebuild, doesn't it make the most sense just to take the best player available, whether that's Will Anderson or Jalen Carter or whoever?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. That's what it means. You know, and you know, some people think Jalen Carter is the best player in the draft. The key to wherever he goes is what teams think of everything that's happened to him in this offseason. And we don't know what the Cardinals think of that. If they're confident in him and they think he'll give that commitment to the game and has the passion for football, he would be a great pick at three because they need help on the interior defensive line, just like Will Anderson would be a great pick to upgrade the pass rush where they need a lot of help. So I would suspect it would be one of those two. It could be a corner. You know, it could be a guy like Christian Gonzalez.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe it will be Johnson. Who knows? But that just shows how much they need that you could make a case for several guys at whatever position, which leads you to believe that, hey, they're going to trade down. And just take the best trade available,
mm-hmm.
even if it doesn't blow the socks off you, and know they'll still get a very good player where they trade down to, and then, as we talked about, pick up those extra choices.
There he is, Howard Balzer, our buddy out there in Arizona. Anytime we need some Cardinals intel, he's usually the one to provide it. Howard, always good to chat. Enjoy the draft tonight.
Thanks, Greg. You too. Take care.
All right. We will take one final timeout on this Thursday afternoon, and we'll come back. Talked about it. DeAndre Hopkins. Okay, and some of these other names floating around. Buda Baker. Lamar Jackson. Might there be some more fireworks as opposed to just the draft pick trading and the wheeling and dealing within the first round? We saw it last year. A.J. Brown, Hollywood Brown. Wrapping up with some more draft talk and a brief little preview of the playoff action tonight in the NBA and the NHL. First in sports, Sportsman Radio.
You're back with First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Live from the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Greg Frank.
Well, it is draft night, and we want to invite you all to spend draft night with our friends at VSiN. The experts will be breaking down every pick and trade, as well as look for live betting values across the board. You'll hear from former NFL executive Mike Lombardi, Super Bowl champion quarterback Sean King, and the VSiN betting experts. You can catch all the action beginning at 8 p.m. Eastern time this evening on the Sports Map Radio Network. As the draft is now just a little over 4 hours away from commencing. And, yeah, I mean, it really all, I think, for everybody starts at 2. I mean, we haven't gotten the Matt Stafford guarantee that the Lions gave, I remember, the 1 year. And I believe Jake Long knew a few days before the Dolphins took him number one overall. But it sure feels like it'll be Bryce Young for Carolina. And then, you know, all the pressure, if you want to call it that, shifts to the Texans. I mean, you know, I will say, I do think that if they take Will Anderson, it's a fine pick. Because Will Anderson, if you told me 9 months from now that he's going to be the defensive rookie of the year, I wouldn't, you know, be surprised at all. And some of these teams, like Houston, are still very far away. Like, I think for the Texans, you're thinking, ah, you know, well, we'll take our 6-7 wins next season and be happy. So you're not there yet in terms of serious expectations of winning. So if you want to just take the best player, I would get it. Now, I would also caution Texans fans from falling into the line of thinking of, oh, we'll just get Caleb Williams next year, or we'll just get Drake May. Everybody says that every year about the next year's quarterbacks classes. Next year's class was C.J. Stroud and Bryce Young. Next year's class was Baker Mayfield and Sam Darnold. Next year's class was Trevor Lawrence and Zach Wilson. It's every year we do this. It doesn't mean, like, we want to always, maybe it's because you always want hope on draft days, and then the draft ends and you're thinking, okay, well, what positions didn't we address? You know, what might be coming in future drafts? We always think, oh, the next quarterback class is better than the last one. And when you're this high up in the draft and you have a hole at quarterback, I get why there's the clamoring to take a quarterback. It's common sense. But I'm just saying, if they take Will Anderson, I understand it. And I think that that's an acceptable pick. I think Tyree Wilson at 2 would be a little bit of a reach. But who knows? That's the beauty of the draft. We're not, no longer are we just throwing stuff at the wall and waiting to see if it'll stick. Now we'll know what stuff we threw at the wall the last 4 months actually did stick. And I mentioned it. Are we going to see a big player traded tonight? Lamar Jackson would be the biggest, but perhaps DeAndre Hopkins is traded. That one makes a lot of sense. We're talking about with Howard Balzer, the guy's getting up there. He could certainly help a contending club, but what's the timeline in Arizona? It sure looks like 2023 is going to be a bad year for the Cardinals. And so even if DeAndre Hopkins is healthy and gives you 1,300 yards, what's that getting you? And, you know, he's an expensive cap hit, and, you know, maybe there won't be a taker and they'll just have to trade him, or excuse me, cut him. But he seems like a very obvious candidate to be playing elsewhere in 2023. Buda Baker is a little more complicated, and we talked a little bit about it with Howard there. He's 27, seems to be a high character guy, and is an excellent football player. But the valuation of safety across the league is always interesting because, you know, we've seen this all the way to Hall of Fame. You know, it's hard for some safeties to get in. And, you know, if you have corners that are blanketing wide receivers, then how much are the safeties adding in the secondary? And that's why we see safeties sometimes. I mentioned Brian Branch earlier in the show, get moved around and try and kind of come up with different ways to add value at the position. So will a team step in and pony up for Buda Baker tonight? And, you know, is there, much the same way we're talking about, is there a pick that might come out of nowhere and maybe somebody takes Joey Porter Jr. in the top 10 of the draft tonight? Well, could there be a trade where it's like, oh, wow, that guy got traded on draft night. Like, didn't see that coming. But I think, much like the combine, much like the owners' meetings, the draft presents an opportunity for these general managers where we're all doing the same thing at the same time. And that can sometimes spark up discourse on certain players. I'll be watching at, I was talking about this with John Bellmer at Show Prep. My Eagles bar here in Houston, where we're based out of, will have a little watch party. And I'm excited. I'm going to it. I do think the draft is a very solid at-home event if you just want to order food in and have the TV volume up. That's fine. I sure hope the speakers are good at the audio system and I can hear everything loud and clear. I'm sure I will at the bar I'm at. But, Bellmer, we were talking a little bit about it. Whatever floats your social boat, go ahead and do tonight, right?
Absolutely. Usually I'm an at-home guy too, but our local station here is having a draft thing at a bar. I'm going to go over there.
There you go.
I decided I'm going to go ahead and take advantage.
Exactly. $4 Yinglings at that's our bar up in our brewery up in it's America's oldest brewery. Yingling started in the 1800s, and it's our Northeast beer, so that will be available Yingling bottles for everybody, and hopefully, you know, we'll see what happens. I'm excited. The Eagles are in this weird spot where they were a contender and they have a top 10 pick, and I'm excited to see where they go. Sure seems like they might be aggressive. Talked about it with our first guest about maybe moving up to get a Jalen Carter if he slips. They lost Javon Hargrave in free agency, so we shall see. As far as the playoff action tonight, we have in the NBA just one game as the Boston Celtics will try again to close out the Atlanta Hawks. Boston, a touchdown favorite in Atlanta, as I guess Janet Jackson will be in the stands as opposed to performing tonight in Atlanta, as the pretty funny arena controversy story there.
Couldn't she do the halftime show or something?
There you go. You know, maybe a post-game concert if the Hawks win and everybody's juiced up about Game 7. So the Hawks and Celtics are the lone game tonight in the association, and we have a trio of Game 5s in the National Hockey League. The Toronto Maple Leafs look for their first postseason series victory in 19 years as they lead 3-1 on the Tampa Bay Lightning with Game 5 tonight in Ontario, as that was a riveting comeback that they had in Game 4 on Monday night in Tampa. And so they'll try and close it out at home tonight. We talked about it with the Knicks fans that have suffered through a lot. Leafs fans have been through a lot the last two decades, and see if they can finally get to the second round. Hudson River rivalry continues tonight as they are back on the Jersey side of state lines. The New Jersey Devils evened things up with a pair of victories at Madison Square Garden. The quote-unquote road team has won every game. I say quote-unquote because I know Madison Square Garden and the Prudential Center, with how close they are to each other in North Jersey and in New York, you get a lot of fans from both teams at these games. Nonetheless, it is now a best of three between the New Jersey Devils and the New York Rangers. And the Vegas Golden Knights, talked about them a little bit earlier. They will try and wrap things up on the Winnipeg Jets tonight as Central Canada's team trails 3-1 against the Vegas Golden Knights. They're back at T-Mobile Arena for that Game 5 this evening. So certainly keeping an eye on the playoff action all across the National Hockey League and the NBA, as the NBA first round coming to a close, but we're not quite there yet. And, you know, I think it's just one little minor blip on, what was it, Tuesday night for the Celtics, and they should just take care of business. But we'll see. Maybe Atlanta has that home crowd engaged, and, you know, Boston feels some pressure down the stretch if it's a close game. That'll wrap things up for us on a first round Thursday edition of First Name Sports. Mean Gene is up on the other side with Sports Kings, as we will have one more show to wrap up the week tomorrow, and it'll be a fun one, I'm sure. These, you know, Monday morning quarterback type shows are always fun, obviously during the football season when we can react to all the games. But tomorrow we get to react to the whole first round and talk about who's still left, because I'm sure there will be several guys who we thought were going to hear their names called tonight and do not. So we'll obviously look ahead to rounds 2 and 3 as well tomorrow. That will wrap things up for today's show. As I said, Sports Kings are up on the other side. My name is Greg Frank, signing off. Thanks to John Bellmer for producing the show. Back tomorrow from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 to 3 Central. It's First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network.